when we say, what would you like the governor and legislature to focus on? Some of the things that stand out are business income tax reform. They feel as though they're overtaxed. Spending cuts. They think that the government simply spends too much money and in the wrong way.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we break down the latest CEO confidence numbers from the Siena College Research Institute, and we go over the 2024 presidential rematch numbers. The index of CEO sentiment has fallen 8 points to its lowest point the survey has found since the Great Recession of 2008. I spoke about that and the presidential race with the poll's director, Dr. Don Levy.
At this point in time, we've been doing the survey, as you point out, for 17 years, and this is the actually the lowest index score. We arrive at that by looking at a number of questions simultaneously, but it's the lowest score that we have seen since it bottomed out during the Great Recession in 2008. So at this point, for example, about two-thirds of CEOs say that they think that business conditions in New York State are getting worse. Only a very, very thin 4% say that they think conditions are getting better. When we ask them, well, what about your local area? Because sometimes people have a slightly better view of their local area. Slightly better, 47% of all CEOs across upstate New York say that local conditions for doing business here in New York State are getting worse. And when we ask them, well, what about the future? Do you think that in the year ahead, things will get better? And unfortunately, at this point in time, 55%, a majority, expect the year ahead to be worse even still. So they face many headwinds. They continue to tell us that governmental regulation is a problem. In fact, overall, they simply do not feel as though the state government or the federal government understands them and helps them by providing economic conditions that will facilitate their success. So they are frustrated with government. And another enormous frustration for them is workforce. Despite their negativity, despite their pessimism, we still see close to a third say that they want to hire. You know, they have enough work where they need additional people. But at present, 80% of CEOs told us there simply is not an ample supply of workers ready, trained, and able to step in and contribute. This is despite them raising wages, offering flexible hours, offering flexible locations. Still, they do not feel as though there is an ample supply of workers ready to step in and aid their business development.
It sounds to me like some of the pandemic disruptions are still having ripple effects for businesses. Is that borne out by the survey?
Well, certainly the CEOs have told us that they have had a difficult time adjusting to some of the pandemic changes. They came through a period of supply chain disruption that seems to have been solved to a great extent. But what they see coming out of the pandemic is difficulty with labor force, but also the effects of inflation have caught them in a bit of a squeeze. Each year we say, what are you going to do to enhance your profitability? And most often in the past, they would say, I'm going to concentrate on growing demand or market share for my business. To some extent, they would say, I'm going to reduce costs, but there's only so many costs that they can cut. What we've seen growth in over the last couple of years coming out of the pandemic is CEOs telling us that their only choice is to raise prices. And at present, 31%, so nearly a third of CEOs, that's up from about 16% pre-pandemic, say that this year they're going to concentrate on raising their prices so as to try to make a profit. So, that in and of itself will further enhance inflationary pressures, but they feel as though they have no choice. And when we ask them, as you look to the year ahead, are your revenues going to go up? Are your profits going to go up? Unfortunately, as part of their pessimistic, some would say realistic attitude, only 29%, that's down 9 points from a year ago, think their revenue is going to go up. And perhaps even more disturbing to these companies, only 21%, one out of five, say that they think their profitability is going to be enhanced this year. That's also down about 5 points from last year.
I know the survey didn't exactly ask this question, but are there things specifically that they want the state to do to make them feel better about the future?
Absolutely. I mean, they tell us when we say, what would you like the governor and legislature to focus on? Some of the things that stand out are business income tax reform. They feel as though they're overtaxed. Spending cuts. They think that the government simply spends too much money and in the wrong way. And interesting, we've seen consistent with their need for employment, 48%, nearly half, say that they'd like to see Albany concentrate on workforce development efforts, that they're asking government to take a leading role in coordinating efforts between the business community, educational communities, economic development entities, to try to develop the workforce in order to enhance their ability to do business. And finally, nearly as many, 47%, say they believe that the government ought to offer business development incentives. Returning to their views on employment for just a second, we also asked them to, in effect, grade the applicants that they see on a series of different components, skills, and attributes. And these numbers are really kind of disturbing. They give negative grades to recent job applicants on everything from technical skills, verbal skills, all the way over to work ethic. In fact, on work ethic specifically, CEOs told us at the rate of 73% that they think that the job applicants they see are no better than fair, if not poor, on work ethic. Only 22% grade incoming job applicants as excellent or good on work ethic. So they're looking for changes in Albany, but they're also, in effect, offering a harsh critique of the workforce that presents themselves for employment. They need people, but they need them to be ready to contribute right away.
That seems like a sticky wicket because we know nationally the unemployment rate is really low. I mean, we're at effectively full employment, so who knows where that, you know, sector of employees is coming from.
Absolutely. They're going to be left with a situation where it's going to actually pose, and some anecdotally told us that they have to now compete for people who are not ready, and they've got to absorb the cost to invest in these folks, to train them, to groom them, to, they say, overcompensate them in order to retain them and develop them as workers. So it's an additional pressure that the CEOs face that, in part, is contributing to this near-record low of their confidence. Is there a silver lining? The survey was taken December, January. It was during that period and now subsequently that we've seen an increase in consumer sentiment, both here in New York and across the nation. We know that we are, to a large extent, a consumer spending-driven economy. If indeed we see consumers slightly more willing and able to spend, that may offer some headwinds, some help to these businesses. Still, we know that from our work on consumer sentiment, you know, as we've talked about before, that despite this increase in consumer sentiment, consumers still face big concerns on costs of everyday items, including groceries, gasoline, and housing. So that's going to further sort of slow their ability to spend on items that might enhance the profitability of upstate New York's companies.
Let me shift gears here, and while we have you, talk about the likely, almost certain rematch between President Biden and former President Trump in this fall's presidential election. Siena's done some recent polling for New York Times reporting about the state of the race. What were some of the major takeaways in your view?
Well, you know, certainly we see, and we're ready as everyone follows presidential politics to say that this is a rematch. We're going to see a rematch of former President Trump against current President Biden. Our most recent polling shows former President Trump up by about 4.5 points in a national a head-to-head showdown. We, of course, don't elect presidents based on national popular vote. So as the race moves on, we're going to concentrate on the six or seven battleground states where the race will really be waged. One thing that comes out in the national polling is that both of the leading candidates, Biden and Trump, have large negatives. Both of them are seen more unfavorably than favorably by the electorate. And in fact, there's a group of people that could very well end up deciding the race, that voter who is negative on both of them. It's about 20% of all voters who say, I have an unfavorable opinion of Joe Biden. I have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump. And in these swing states, it's those, it's some people now have taken to referring to that group of voters as the double hater. But that group of voters who is dissatisfied with both choices, they say at an overwhelming rate that Biden is too old to be effective. But a majority of those double hater voters feel that former President Trump is too old and that he lacks the appropriate temperament to be president. So it's those voters who are less satisfied with both candidates and coincidentally at the same time less engaged in politics who are going to end up ultimately in states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, more than likely deciding who wins those states and ultimately who wins the presidency.
So how unusual is this? Because as long as I can remember, every election has, at least in the coverage, kind of boiled down to, well, it's a lesser of two evils. I don't like either option. You know, there's always a third party candidate or two who gets some attention and maybe can play spoiler. Is it very unusual to have the two frontrunners be this disliked?
It is in terms of degree. I mean, we started to see this in the 2016 race between Trump and Hillary Clinton, where this group of folks who had a negative view of both of them grew and started to grow above 10%. You know, in that race, we had it at about 17%, and now that has persisted. At the same time, this election is unique in terms of the age of both of these candidates. These are the two oldest people that we've ever seen competing for the presidency, and the issue of age, effectiveness, and temperament is perhaps more acute than we have ever seen it before. The other thing that I think is dramatically different is that there is an erosion of enthusiasm in one party at present that isn't matched exactly in the other party. Democrats at this point in time demonstrate a significant lack of enthusiasm for their candidate. In fact, in our poll, almost half of Democrats, and equal percent who said they'd be enthusiastic or satisfied with Joe Biden, say that they would not. And we continued to see right up through our poll that was taken just 10 days ago that significant percentage of Democrats say, I still would like someone else. So as yet, Democrats have not coalesced behind their candidate. In terms of the Republican Party, we're coming now out of the primaries. It appears as though Trump will wrap up the delegate count. But still, in some states, Nikki Haley was pulling as many as 40%. In Super Tuesday, it doesn't look in most states as though she got that degree of support. But still, that's going to be a question as to whether or not the Republicans will all come home, as they say in politics, and support Donald Trump or not. So that battle is going to be waged in terms of both parties leading up to their convention. And then finally, when we clear the convention towards the end of August, that's when these less engaged double haters are going to be forced to decide. They're going to, you know, they can put it off. They can put it off until the fall and listen to you, listen to me, discuss this. But somewhere in September, October, they're going to have to decide. The other ingredient that I'm sure we'll talk about more is third party. We have seen historically a number of different third-party candidates affect the race. You go back to the 90s, and you can talk about Ross Perot. At this point, that will be a question that will be resolved over the coming months. In addition to RFK, Robert Kennedy Jr., is there going to be a no-labels candidate? Is there going to be, are the Libertarians, the Green Party, going to get on the ballot in many states? And to what degree are they going to siphon off votes from the two leading candidates that could have an effect within these battleground states? It seems as though the third-party impetus at this point is greater than we have seen for quite some time in American presidential politics. So in some ways, it's a story that's familiar to us over the last few presidential cycles, but I think many of the ingredients of the story, the double haters, the third-party candidates, the question as to whether both parties can coalesce around their front runners, are exacerbated compared to the last couple of presidential cycles.
Dr. Don Levy is director of the Siena College Research Institute. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Don, and I look forward to checking in as this race develops.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.